columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
All right, we just had Bill Polian on. The legendary, the Hall of Famer. How do you win Executive of the Year six different times?
Oh, you go to four Super Bowls with the... With the Buffalo Bills, you're the architect of getting the Carolina Panthers going there when they first started.
Yeah, you got them to the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, in only a few years, I believe.
Yeah, it was just the second year. It's the second year of the team, and Bill Polian had the Panthers in the NFC title game.
Yeah, so that right there, and then obviously the run that he had in Indianapolis, and it started with drafting Peyton Manning, and the rest is history. Won a lot of football games.
How about this? Bill Polian drafted Bruce Smith, the NFL's all-time sack leader, and Peyton Manning, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. That is pretty cool.
That is good stuff.
Man, that was great content. Great content. There was a couple things that really stuck out to me. I'm curious, when it comes to you, what sunk in the most?
Well, sorry right there. I had to turn down my input told me to. Right. I mean, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to turn it down and all that noise, or do you want me to blow my nose into the...
Don't get frustrated with me because I tried to help you out.
I'm not getting frustrated.
You sound like my wife. What do you want me to do?
I'm just asking. Well, I'm just asking, what would you prefer?
Oh, my God.
Should I put my, the microphone piece up and make that noise and blow my nose, or should I do the little thing where it goes...
Put your mic up and let us hear you blow your nose from afar.
Okay. That's what I'll do. Yeah, because that thing makes too much noise for whatever reason. All I'm doing is turning down the
knob. I don't know why it's doing that. Right. It should not be doing that at all. We should not be hearing that input being turned down at all.
Yeah, well, it's one of the things you got to deal with when you're, doing radio the way we're doing radio now.
It's pandemic radio, man.
It's all good. It's all good. We'll adapt and overcome. It's just a little detail.
That's not a big deal.
It's okay. Just trying to figure things out, though, right, on the fly. That's what we're doing. Trying to figure it out and come up with the best solution so, we don't sound ridiculous.
So what was
the question that I asked about the offense and him drafting Reggie Wayne, and I should have thrown in Dallas Clark there also, both of those guys in the first round when you got weapons everywhere, Edgerrin James, Marvin Harrison, right, and you're still drafting these skill position players in the first round like the Broncos did.
It's pretty unique, the parallel.
Yeah.
It really is, where you already have Marvin. He's one of the best in the game. You go draft Reggie Wayne with the first round pick, and then 2 years later you're drafting Dallas Clark. And you look at Jerry Judy and Noah Pham.
You drafted Edgerrin James too before that in the first round. Before Reggie Wayne.
Oh, good call. 99. Right.
So you had Marvin, you draft Edge, you draft Reggie, you draft Dallas Clark, these guys in the first round.
Wow.
And you look on the other side of the football, and that team could have used some defensive help. Throughout that tenure there, where maybe you could have said, man, we got Peyton Manning here. Gosh, he's a great quarterback. Let's go ahead and get ourselves a first-round linebacker, right, or a first-round defensive tackle or something like that. Now, obviously, they did draft Dwight Freeney in the first round. But, by and large, they were skill position first round after first round. And you look at it and you're like, okay, well, you don't need a first-round wide receiver. You got Marvin. You don't need a first-round running back. Who drafts a running back in the first round? You don't need that. You don't need a first-round tight end, but he did that. I loved his answer. I don't quite remember what it was, but, when he's talking about Jerry Judy, I do remember what it was. And he was talking about Jerry Judy. Jerry Judy's going to get two or three people's attention, safety, linebackers, a tackle is just blocking one guy. That's it. He's just responsible for one guy, a wide receiver, a tight end. They're dynamic players. They can impact the game and impact multiple defenders. I never thought of it that way.
It's so simple, though. He's boiling it down to its most simplistic form, and I'm like you. I've never thought of it that way before. But gosh, that was the number one thing that stuck out to me. If you have a guy that's dynamic the way that Jerry Judy is, he is like a vacuum sucking the attention of multiple defenders at once.
Yes. So that was very interesting, and obviously it applies here when you look at what the Broncos did and drafting a couple wide receivers. And he said you need three, you know, talented wide receivers and playmakers. You need a tight end, and you see the way the Broncos have operated. It makes sense. It makes sense, the game plan that John Elway put into place. You ignore the offensive line a little bit here. You got to get more skill position players. You got to get more playmakers. And that's what we've talked about. And you hear from Bill Polian, and it kind of solidifies what we've been talking about and saying that, hey, this was the right approach for the Broncos. Now, you got to hit on the guys, but I like the approach and I like the plan here of trying to get this offense back going again, because I don't care how good your offensive line is. If you don't have playmakers to help your quarterback out, wide receivers, it ain't going to be a good offense.
Yeah, I loved that part of the conversation. Him just saying, like, come on, let's be serious. And the people who act like wide receivers and running backs
right.
just fall off of trees, it's just not true. And man,
that was good. I love that one.
It really was, because that was the approach with this year's NFL draft.
Yep.
Oh, dude, it's chock full of receivers. You can get what they're all going to hit. You can get one in the second round. Wait till the third round.
Third round. They're going to be there. I'm telling you, draft one there in the third round.
It's just not true. And, man, that might have been my favorite part of the interview.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. It was good stuff. It's always fun to reconnect with him and kind of get his wisdom on things and what's going on now. But certainly, when you look at Indy, and the parallels between Indy and what's going on here in Denver are very, very similar. So it was so good to hear his approach and his thought process of even when you have a great quarterback, you know, you're still getting these guys and drafting these skill position players in the first round.
Yeah. No, for sure. And you know, I'll get into the one question a little bit later, because his answer on it was tremendous in terms of, like, what our expectations should be for this 2020 offense.
Right.
Man, that one really stuck with me. You know, I didn't hear what I wanted to hear, but we heard the truth. And I think that we need to, you know, be acknowledging the specifics of what he laid out. And we'll do that a little bit later. But I guess I'll ask you this on the way out to this segment. Did you like his answer to my question that I tried to ask as respectfully as possible when it comes to Lamar Jackson, who Bill Polian once said, hey, you know, you think about changing to receiver. And then now 2 years in the league, the guy's the MVP.
Yeah, no, his answer to that, you know, yeah, I liked it. I think when you look at it, you know, the way he said he was evaluating him was as a prototypical drop-back quarterback. And when you look at Lamar Jackson that way, well, obviously that wouldn't be a strength of his, right? He probably wouldn't be successful doing that. But what Baltimore did, you give Baltimore a lot of credit. They went the Tim Tebow approach and said, you know what? We're not going to try to make this guy fit into a prototypical NFL offense. We're going to go and we're going to put an offense around him that suits his strengths. And that's what they've done. And so you look at it, he's like, look, I missed on that one. I didn't evaluate him that way.
Yep.
To where you could put him in that type of offense. So, I thought it was a good answer. I like that answer.
Yeah.
But you see what you have to do, and you have to navigate these waters of these guys coming in. And, you know, sometimes you have to say, hey, look at this, you know, this quarterback here, we're not going to try to put him in our offense. We're going to put an offense around him for his strengths. And certainly we look at, you know, Paxton Lynch and the debacle that was. But the Broncos didn't help him out, because the Broncos didn't say, that's our first-round quarterback. Let's put an offense around his strengths. Nope, that's not what they said. What they said was, hey, Paxton, come in here. You're going to have to figure this out and run this style of an offense and be under center and do the things that you know, the Gary Kubiak offense. And it just never worked out. Certainly, you know, we've talked a lot about it. There's blame both sides here, but the Broncos didn't help. They didn't help that development of Paxton Lynch, because they tried to put him in their offense. But you see what Baltimore did. Baltimore did it. They did it the right way, and, I mean, it's worked out in a big way for them.
Yeah, and they revolutionized the game of football. They really did. They tore everything down. And how could have Bill Polian known at the time? Now, you know, maybe he took it, you know, to a further degree than most, but who could have known that the Baltimore Ravens would go on and be the greatest rushing football team of all time, because that's exactly what happened this past year.
Crazy.
Nearly 3,300 rushing yards. That was a record that stood since 1978 from the New England Patriots, and they broke that record in the first half of Week 17 this past year. Unbelievable.
Wow.
All right. We will take a we'll put that conversation on the back burner for now, and we will crank up the heat in the Fan Film Room. Albert Okwuegbunam.
Okwuegbunam. Yes.
I have been looking all forward looking forward all day. All day. I got to cross those I's and dot those T's, Stoke.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I've been waiting for this segment, and we'll get to it next. All right, we take a look at Albert Okwuegbunam, the tight end out of Missouri, Drew Locke's former teammate. Went back and looked at a game of his from 2018.
Yeah, where a couple years back.
Yeah, when he was playing alongside Drew Locke.
That was fun to watch Drew throwing it around at Missouri.
It really was. It really was. And I'll tell you, man, what a game. What a game of radio. What
mic
a game
check.
Of...
mic check. Am I here?
You're here.
Can you hear? Okay.
I can hear you.
I thought I blew up the machine.
Nope.
Okay, good.
This was Missouri versus Memphis from a couple years ago. And after you watched this thing, what did you make of it?
Well, excuse me. You see him line up all over the football field. You see them line. They line them up outside. They line them up in the slot. They line them up standing up. You know, a couple yards outside the tackle. They line them up right next to the tackle in a 3-point stance. He's in the backfield. So they line this guy up all over the place. He's standing up. He's in a 3-point stance and very versatile. But they put him all over the place. He had a great touchdown coming out of the backfield, lined up almost in the fullback position, and kind of they were running the zone read, and he just slipped right through there, and the linebackers bit up on the run, and the quarterback just dumped it right over the linebackers, and he took off for a 65-70-yard touchdown and just ran away from everybody else. I mean, you notice the speed.
Impressive in the open field.
You got safeties and cornerbacks chasing him, and they're not gaining any ground. And so the guy can flat out, he can run. So that was a nice play there. You see him throughout the course of the game on a couple catches there using his big body to block out defenders. And it's hard for these guys to go around him and get the ball out and knock the ball down. And so uses his body well in space to defend, you know, where the ball's coming from and catching the ball. I think he needs to use his speed a little bit more. And I said the same thing with K.J. Hamler.
Yes, yes.
You see sometimes when he gets going and he's just rocking and rolling and coming off the football, firing on all cylinders, it's like, wow, this guy's moving well. I just think he needs to do that more. Hey, speed, speed, speed. You know, sometimes these guys might think a little bit too much. And just use your speed, big fella, because that's your biggest strength. And that's going to be your biggest strength in the NFL is how fast you are. So I'd like to see him use his speed a little bit more when he comes off the ball. Because when he does, it's wow. He's moving. Also, his blocking. Sometimes he lunges at the defender.
Yeah.
And gets off balance. He needs to have a better base. Move your feet. Like, chop your feet. Move your feet. And so those are just like little things that are very correctable, very fixable. But certainly there's some room there for improvement with the blocking because, like, this guy's huge. He ought to be demolishing people.
I know.
He ought to be pancaking people. He ought to be.
I didn't see any of that.
Running
dude.
People out of the screen. Nope. Didn't see any of that.
But doesn't that have to be? And I don't mean to cut you off, Stoke. But doesn't that have to be some sort of like just a desire to get after it? Like I saw him standing straight up too much. Like he just didn't seem like he went about. And again, you know, is he going to be? He wasn't drafted, so he could come in here and block. I got that. But I was hoping to see more because effort.
A little bit more physicality,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it just goes back to like an effort thing. You are a physical specimen. You have God-given gifts, and I just hate seeing effort issues really at any time, especially when you should be as hungry as you are as a college player before you've earned a dime.
Yeah, you know, 6'5", 250, 255, just big man. And so, but sometimes those big guys, you know, they're not the most flexible guys. And so you see him kind of standing up sometimes. He just needs to stay lower, needs to move his feet, drive his feet. And hopefully that's just a technique thing. And hopefully he'll get a little bit more nasty on him. Because certainly when you're that size and you can do the things that he does in the passing game, if he can get a little nasty and clean up some technique stuff in the running game, this guy could be a really, really good football player. He also he had another great touchdown catch on a fake slip screen, the DT play.
Yes.
The fake DT play. And he made another nice catch, almost like the K.J. Hamler catch, over-the-shoulder Willie Mays style.
Yes.
Really, really nice catch. For a big man like that to have that type of agility and hands and to be able to adjust to that football and bring it in and stay in bounds for the touchdown, I thought was really, really awesome. So overall for me.
Can I just give you a thought on that real quick before I get your overall, because I want to go back to that specific play that you just talked about.
Yeah.
So he has to track that ball in, and you used the example I was going to use, the old Willie Mays, like, you know, have to track it over your shoulder. Noah Fant is a better football player than Albarokou Ebounam. I believe that with every ounce of me. I just don't, you know, I just, it is what it is. But Noah struggles with that particular play where Albert was able to maintain his focus, track that ball into his hands when it's not perfectly, like, on the numbers, forward-facing. We've seen Noah struggle with that. And so I don't want to get confused at all saying that Albert O is a better football player than first-round draft pick Noah Fant. But I saw a sliver of something that Noah doesn't quite have yet.
No, Noah, you know, it's the outfielder and adjusting to balls and being able to come back to balls. And we talked a lot about it last year. He just struggles with adjusting to the football sometimes in the air. But you saw on that play for Albert Okuwebunam, just a great job of adjusting to the football on a really tough catch and following it over his outside shoulder there and bringing it in and getting in the end zone. So it just shows you his athleticism. But also, that's a big component. When you're that big of a man, to be able to adjust to the football like that, that's something special. So he does have special qualities, certainly. Now, he's got to clean up some other things. But this guy, my overall thought process on watching this game and thinking how he's going to transition to the NFL, I mean, if he cleans up a few things and he's got that hunger and that desire, which I don't know if he has it or not, but if he has those types of things and he's willing to work on a few things, this guy could be a special player.
You know, I love it. I love it. I'll give you my overall take on it. I think that Albert O can contribute from day one if you simplify things, because this guy's a home run hitter. He is a home run hitter. If this dude gets out in space and he's able to crank up the speed, much like Noah Fant, in sort of the same regard. I don't know about how his giddy up is, but once he is at max capacity, if you hit this dude in stride, like on a seam route, good luck. I mean, he has elite speed for his size and position. So I think he's a guy that, you know, like yesterday I said about McTelvin Ajeem, just for a couple different reasons, I don't expect McTelvin Ajeem to be contributing in his first year. Albert O, I feel the opposite about, because of the home run ability.
Like it. I like it. I think he should contribute. Yeah, I'm with you. I think he should contribute this year and be able to get out on the football field. Now, depending on offseason, how quickly he gets up to speed with the offense, but certainly that size and that speed, you find different packages to be able to use them, whether it be red zone situations, short yardage situations, things like that. You find situations to be able to get him on the football field because his talent, it just is eye popping, and you got to find places to use a guy like that. And early on, first year might be a little bit slow for him and take some time, but hopefully towards the end of the year we'll see more and more of this guy. And I think we got a chance to have a special 1-2 punch between him and Noah Fant.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool, and it was great to see Drew Lock throwing these passes.
Oh, I mean, it was awesome.
These guys, man. And actually, last thought here, Noah Fant broke the record at Iowa for touchdown passes as a tight end, or touchdown catches as a tight end, 19. If you know anything about Iowa tight ends, they put out some great ones.
Yeah.
Some great ones. Noah Fant has the Iowa tight end record for touchdowns, 19. Albert Okwuegbunam, in the same amount of years, put up 23. So this dude has a knack for getting into the end zone, specifically when he was playing with Drew Lock.
Really cool.
Love doing this fan film room. All right. A member of the Broncos offense said John Elway did what he had to do this offseason. We'll tell you who said what next. A member of the Broncos offense said that John Elway simply did what he had to do this offseason. We'll get to that in just a second.
Are you eating?
Maybe.
Yeah, I could tell.
Yeah?
Bam, gotcha. Yep.
You know, you get to know someone well enough. My wife said to me last week, she said, you want to know what? She said, sometimes when you come back from break, I can tell that you've just been eating, even though you're not eating on the air. And I'm like, can you really? So you saying that just provides the validation that she's right.
Bam.
I mentioned that Peyton's Place is coming back for season two. Did you see that Tom Brady is going to be rolling out a full documentary along with ESPN detailing the 9 Super Bowls that he went to, the 6 that he has won, the 3 that he has lost. And it's going to debut next year. It's from the creators of one of the creators of ESPN's 30 for 30 series. And Brady has been typically not willing to, you know, really pull back that curtain and let people in. But it sounds like he's going to do this in a documentary that's going to be rolled out next year. And it should be pretty cool that each of these episodes are going to be, you know, the season in which he won or lost the Super Bowl and what was going on during that time. And, you know, even though that Brady's not the, you know, a fan favorite around here, he is an all-time great player. And coming off the heels of The Last Dance, you know, that's sort of where my head is at with sports docs right now. This could be pretty cool.
Sure.
Who cares?
Way to no sell that stuff. You're one of a kind.
Thank you, Tom. Back at you, buddy.
He wants a little bit more. He wants a little bit more than what you gave
that
him.
That was like a peck.
Yeah.
All right.
Back at you, Tommy.
A member of the Broncos offense said John Elway just simply did what he had to do. It was Dalton Reisner. And he said that, look, last year's offense just was not where it needed to be.
Hey, the offense wasn't where we needed to be last year. The defense was on point. Fangio's comfortable with who he has on defense. I know we picked up a guy or two, but they said, hey, we got to get Drew Lock the tools to make something happen. There were plenty of times last year that we ended the game with some great drives and finished really, really good. But the first 2 or 3 quarters, we struggled to put points on the board. We have to do better this year. And we went out and we got talent, and they spent draft picks on guys that can help us do that. So now as an offense, it's our job to make sure that we get the job done with the tools we have. There's no excuses for us to not go out there and put points up this year. And as an offensive lineman and as an offensive line, we got to do what we can to give Drew time to make some things shake.
It wasn't where it needed to be. Elway did what he had to do, and there's no excuses. We got to go out there and do it.
That's right. I mean, really, look, we've all seen this offense and the slow decline and the slow erosion of this offense and just how it just hadn't been close to being good enough. And it needed an influx quickly of talent and skill positions and guys that can just flat go get it and be explosive. And that's how you win in the NFL. You got to have an explosive offense. And the Broncos weren't even close to having one. So, obviously, look, I get that, you know, we talked to Bill Polian about it. I get it. You know, there's no excuses right now anymore moving forward, but at the same time, there kind of is, and it's just the facts of the situation and the lack of an offseason and a new offensive coordinator and a new offense and a lot of changing pieces there and a lot of young pieces there that you're counting on. So those are just the facts of the situation. So this is a offense that I think in time has a chance to be special, and a lot depends on Drew Lock. But early on, you know, it just doesn't happen overnight. You know, you got to work at it. You got to practice at it. And right now they're not able to do it.
Right. It's got to be maddening for someone like Drew. you know, who wants to get after it, wants to compete, wants to put these puzzle pieces together and see what it looks like. And you're so
looks like he's in town.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I did not see that. Yeah. Drew Locke's in town.
Yeah.
Well, we knew he was coming. He said to the drive that he was actually coming. You know, I forget the timetable, but
Mickey's Twitter.
All right. What was he doing? What was the tweet?
He was working out. Working out at a local field. So I don't know who else was with him. But it seems like he's here. He's working out and training a little bit. So hopefully the receivers get here and they can, you know, start doing some throwing.
All right. Cool. Dalton Risner went on to say that Drew Locke, he's got an edge to him.
Drew Locke is a special character, man. My guy Drew loves his macaroni and cheese and his chicken tenders. He's a human like the rest of us. But one thing I will say about Drew is that he's one of the biggest competitors I've ever met. When Drew steps on that field, you know, people might say his celebrating, his rapping on the sidelines too much, but I say it's not. I think that Drew brings a special edge to the game. When he gets out on the field, we all get excited. We all believe that when it's third down long, Drew could still make something happen, especially with Cortland Sutton out there on the edge. And now Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler, we have the guys to make it happen. And Drew is just one of those guys that is infectious. You know, whether he's celebrating, acting like he's Buzz Lightyear, or whatever celebration he's doing, it gets us excited. And that's a guy that we want to go to. And so he has a lot of room to grow, a big career ahead of him. But I'm so excited for Drew. He's one of my best friends, and he deserves all the recognition coming his way.
That's pretty cool to hear from. You know, your teammate and your offensive lineman, you talk about a full endorsement. It sounds like these guys are tight already.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. You know, like you said, you know, when your quarterback makes everybody around him believe that no matter the situation, he's going to get the job done, that's huge. And that seems like what Drew has done with his football team in only 5 games, that they believe when he goes out there that he's going to find a way to get it done no matter the situation. And that's huge.
That's huge. All right, the NFL continues to change. Here, just within the last 2 days, major changes coming, and even today, it sounds like more changes could be coming. We'll take a dive into it next. The NFL continues to morph and change. Remember Animorphs? Remember those books, though? Animorphs? Stoke, are you with us? Nah, it's just me. I should have known. And there he is. I bet he's putting his headset back right on now, isn't he? Stoke, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, I knew you'd
been
be
here.
There.
What?
Mike Kliss. Do we have Mike? Mike Kliss joins us here. Appreciate the time, Mike, our 9 News insider. The NFL has changed some things just in the last couple days. It looks like the owners approved new measures on Tuesday aiming at improving diversity in the coach and front office hirings. They did stop short of that that resolution that got proposed about rewarding minority hires with draft pick compensation. I made it clear how I felt on that one. But they did take some new measures, Mike. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I think it's good that they increased the interview process to where for a head coach, you now have to interview 2 minority candidates And I think maybe a bigger step is for offensive and defensive coordinators and special teams, too. You have to interview at least 1 minority candidate, because I've been saying that the problem has been that the NFL does over the years, where it's been where its greatest failing has been, and is letting minorities become offensive coordinators and call the plays. Eric Bieniemy and Byron Leftwich are the only 2 black offensive coordinators in the league, and only Leftwich calls the plays, although, you know, we know Arians and now Brady are going to have the hammer whenever they want to use it. Bieniemy does not call the plays with the Chiefs, but that's been typical of forever and ever and ever. So I think this is going to help. Yeah, I think that the clearest path to becoming a head coach is being an offensive coordinator who calls plays and you have success. You do that, you're right away the leading candidate to become a head coach the next year. And that's not where the black assistant head coaches, and there are many qualified receiver coaches who are minorities and running back coaches. But the league seems to stop short of giving them that offensive coordinator responsibility. And I think they addressed that with this. And I'm also glad I'm with you, Zach. I was not for the draft pick compensation. I thought that kind of lacked some integrity there in the process.
Yeah, agree here. I mean, you can't all of a sudden you're undermining whoever you hired because people are going to look at it like you got hired because the team wanted to improve their draft picks, exactly. Regardless of if that was a situation or not. So I think, you know, and you heard from different people about it. Lewis Riddick spoke about it, and he didn't like it. I mean, because all of a sudden you're getting a job where people are going to look at it and say, well, you only got it because of draft picks. And that's not the way you want to get a job. So I like the direction they're heading. Let's get more interviews and get more opportunities available. So certainly, Cliss, yes, get to offensive coordinators. That's how you get to head coach. So I like what the NFL is trying to do here. I think it's a better rule, and it's going to hopefully we'll see more African-Americans get these positions and get opportunities to be head coaches and general managers, because there's a lot of deserving ones out there, certainly. And so hopefully this helps, and we can start seeing more minorities in those positions. But, Mike, I wanted to ask you about your article. You went behind the scenes there on 9 News, on your 9news.com, and it's on your Twitter page there, at Mike Cliss, talking about the tight ends. Oh. Mike, talking about how many tight ends are in the tight end room. It's a lot. And the one that just keeps on jumping out to me is just Jeff Heuermann still hanging around, and the avenue for him to be on this football team come July is just slim to none.
Yeah, there's 8 in the room, and that's after they cut Bug Howard about a couple weeks ago. They might have cut Bug before they started the virtual team meetings. But Nick Vanette, you know, who's been around, he's been with Seattle, he's been with Pittsburgh. He says he's never been in a tight end room that's been that crowded. They've got 8, including Andrew Beck, who is going to be, a hybrid of a fullback. They don't really have a fullback in this offense.
He's a good football player.
Use one. Yeah.
He can do both, fullback, tight end, and
H-back. Cool pass. What did he had that game where the pitch was a forward lateral? He got the least productive trifecta in history last year in the Lions win. He had a rush for a rush for 3 yards, a reception for 1 yard, and that lateral to Philip Lindsay for 6 yards. So he didn't even get 10 yards out of the pass completion, rush, and the reception. But he is, they like him. They really like that guy for a lot of reasons, not just on field, but does his presence in the locker room for a young guy, very mature, the son of a military guy. He's what the Broncos want in that locker room. But, you know, like Jake Butt, you know, it speaks to his football character and his character as a guy that he's still on the team when he's played 3 games for him in 3 years. And, you got to think, Jake Butt, this is his last gasp. It's a very much a long shot that he'll be there. And like you say, Stoke, Jeff Heuermann is due to make $3.8 million this year. They signed Nick Vanette to basically fill that role for $3 million. You're not going to keep 2 guys, for that type of money. So how it ends for Jeff Heuermann, I'm not sure, but it doesn't look like he's going to be on the roster.
Do you have, and I'm just curious if you know, and it's okay if you do or if you don't, Jake Butt, you just mentioned his name in passing. He's given this, one more shot here, and good for him for being resilient. I mean, I admire it, no doubt. Do you have any sort of status update on him physically?
I do not. No, a lot of these guys, if they haven't had surgeries, and, I'm aware of a couple of cleanups here and there, but, this is a tough time to get updates on these guys physically.
Sure.
Just because, you know, we're not out there. They're not around. You know, they're working out on their own. You know, Jake Butt, here's the other thing to that question. You know how many times we've asked Jake Butt, how you doing? And he said, I'm doing great in the last 3 years. you know, just about every, he answered it just about every time that way. And, you know, as it turned out, he wasn't great. So until he gets out on the field and you see him run around, I imagine Jake Butt is in a situation where he better be busting off a route and, you know, making, you know, planting that foot and making the cut. Day one of training camp, or it's going to be, you know, impossible for him to make the team.
Yeah, and I think with Jake Butt, the you know, this offseason doesn't do him any favors. You know, he's a guy that that needed to be healthy by this offseason, go out there and have a great, great offseason, and then carry that momentum into training camp, but no offseason. You look at the tight end room, look, Noah Fant making the team, Albert Okwuegbunam making the team, fourth-round pick, Nick Vanette, he's making the team. They just gave him, like, you know, $1.5 million, $1.7 million signing bonus, so he's making the team. That's three right there. And you're probably going to keep, who is it, Austin Fort? Or Andrew Beck, excuse me. You're probably going to keep Andrew Beck also.
Andrew Beck's four. And then,
right, and that's it. Know, I mean, you're not keeping more guys than that. I mean, that's it. Room's full. And so Jake Butt, in order to, you know, maybe take over Andrew Beck's role, he would need this offseason. It would be critical for him, and he's not going to have it, which is, I think, a shame for him. Now, we'll see if he can make up and play catch-up in training camp. But, I mean, that's a full, full room there, that tight end position. But, Mike, I wanted to ask you about another injury. Elijah Wilkinson, we saw that he had some kind of operation on the ankle.
Yep.
Well, what do you know about Elijah Wilkinson and his surgery?
Hello?
Elijah Wilkinson?
Oh, Elijah, well, yeah, I lost you there for a minute. I don't know what happened. Yeah, Elijah Wilkinson, what happened was he had that sprained ankle at the end of last season. And as the offseason went along, his ankle kept clicking, kept locking up on him. And they took another MRI, and sure enough, they saw some loose bodies in there. And Stoke, I know you know what loose bodies, maybe you can tell people what loose bodies are, but they went in there and did a minor scope. If they had OTAs, if it wasn't, from what I understand, if they had OTAs, he would not have got this procedure. But since, you know, there's no off-season practices and they don't have to get back on the field until July 28th, July 29th, he decided to go ahead and get it cleaned out, get those loose bodies cleaned out a little bit. And they think he'll be ready in 2 or 3 weeks to be he just got it done about 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And he thinks he'll be ready in 2 or 3 weeks. So, you know, should be full go to compete against Garrett Bowles at left tackle on late July.
All right. We will leave it there for now. Mike, we appreciate you stopping by like you do each and every Thursday here on Stokely and Zach. Have a great rest of your day and a nice long weekend.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thanks, there Mike. He goes, Mike Kliss. Would have kept Mike just a little bit longer. Yeah. It seemed like we had a connection issue with his phone.
Yeah, I kept
phone.
On full of my stuff. I thought it was my stuff, but it was his phone.
Yeah,
it's fixed now.
It was right. Yep, it was.
It was crackling. I was like, oh my gosh! I started
no
messing with the dials and everything. Like this
is not good. No. Don't touch anything. we're back to that. Don't touch anything.
Right.
No, we turned you all the way down and realized that it was a connection issue with Mike. But look, with the conversation about the tight ends, man, you would be hard pressed to find a more beat up room. In the last couple years than the tight end room for the Broncos. I mean, the drafting of Jeff Heuermann, he's never really been right. From the moment in the offseason that he was drafted, Jake Butt, we were optimistic that he could be the guy. And I believe he was a third-round pick, but a couple third-round picks, right? Heuermann and Jake Butt.
No, Jake was fifth round.
Yeah, he was fifth round. I apologize. Troy Fumagalli, was he?
He was a later round pick also.
Okay, so he's
fifth round or so.
Okay.
So yeah, he was also a later round pick. But you're right, he can't stay. He hadn't really been healthy either.
No.
And then last year he started off so strong, and all of a sudden, you know, he had a nice off season, had a nice start to training camp, and then after a couple of days, he just kind of faded away.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.